This is the BBC.
Just chuck that over, your crib sheet, just in case I've forgotten what I'm doing. Great. So, hello and welcome to Podcasting House. And here we are again. I've got Eli with me.
Hello.
And I am Rhianne. And every week we bring you an episode from the vast range of rather marvellous BBC podcasts. And we'll put one up into this feed. You can decide if you like it and then go away and subscribe via BBC Sounds. Yeah. So it's Eli's turn.
Hi.
What have you got?
I've got 1,800 seconds. That's half an hour for those of you counting on autism. We featured an episode on Podcasting House some time ago with these two presenters, Robin and Jamie, and I shouldn't forget Lion, who did an episode of the Ouch podcast about autism. They're two autistic presenters, and they sort of talked about what it's like to be someone with autism from their two specific angles. So it wasn't somebody kind of investigating the phenomenon of autism and talking to experts and things like that. It was just the two of them talking. And we loved it so much, we thought there should just be more of them.
We did.
And now there are more of them.
It's magic.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. 1,800 seconds on autism.
Hey, guys, before this podcast starts, there's a trumpet coming, just so you know.
Turn your volume down a bit. Shall we do it then?
1,800 seconds on autism.
With Robin Stewart and Jamie Knight.
Are you going to cook a meal tonight?
Yeah, I think that's going to cost 2 spoons, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
It's a lot of spoons. I haven't got any spoons left now.
So I pulled it out and threw it on the floor and then was like, wait, now the fire's out of the oven. That's probably not a good idea.
My parents knew as soon as they saw me, definitely something wrong with you because you've gone grey and you're not speaking very much.
Welcome to 1,800 Seconds on Autism. The name might give it away, but I'm just going to say it anyway, that this is a programme about autistic life presented by two autistic people. I'm Robin Stewart.
And I'm Jamie Knight, although most people know me as Jamie and Lion, and I should probably
Who's
explain
Lion?
The Lion. So Lion is a 4-foot-long plushy toy that goes everywhere with me. He's really lovely. He's here now. He's waving at all the listeners, which, you know, doesn't really make sense for a podcast.
And the antelopes. He's waving at the antelopes.
Oh, yeah, he really loves a good antelope. Lion is about 4-foot-long and he goes everywhere with me. Big, fluffy lion. And he's one of the ways that I approach interacting with the world as an autistic person. But, of course, not all autistic people are the same.
Yep. And we have our neurotypical support person. Well, he's actually Jamie's neurotypical support person, Ollie. Hello, Ollie.
Hello.
So Ollie is part of my autistic life. So whereas, for example, a lot of people find it easy to go to loud places or busy places, I really struggle. So we say that Ollie's job is to make sure that I'm not on fire. Am I not on fire?
Currently, yes.
Good. But he also stops me from getting run over and ending up in the wrong place, backwards, upside down and on fire.
And our producer, Damon, is here.
Hello.
And he'll be wandering in and out as we record.
In future editions, we'll be having all sorts of guests, doing a bit of music, because Robin is very musically talented, and we're going to be playing with some gadgets. But on this programme, we're just going to introduce ourselves, have a chat, settle into this slightly unfamiliar studio, and we'd like you to stay tuned, because we're going to talk a bit about sensory stuff and what is and isn't autism-friendly. So, Robin, the question that the producers of this programme want to know is, drumroll please, can I have a drumroll effect? Brilliant. Is this studio autism-friendly? What
well,
do you think, Robin?
I prefer it when the lights are off.
Yeah, I think I prefer it when the lights are off as well.
Maybe we could ask Ollie if he could turn the lights off.
Ollie is very nice. He's a very good friend of mine. He quite often helps me adapt environments so that they suit me better. And with the lights completely off, I think that's working better.
That's
Thanks,
good.
Ollie.
Jamie, maybe you should have a wander around and check out the studio and honorate it.
This is a thing I do when I'm getting used to places. It helps me get an idea of how big they are. So I tend to wander around them and look at things. I'm going to take my headphones off so I won't be able to hear you. So this should be a blast.
So Jamie has taken his headphones off.
And the thing that interests me first is that the glass is all funny angles. So I'm running my fingers around the outside of the room. And I found the seam in the wall. I wonder what's behind there. And I'm just running my edge around the outside so I get an idea of the size of the space. And it also means that I tend to find things that I might not have noticed. So I'm now stood behind Robin. I promise I won't eat you.
Okay.
I've already eaten breakfast.
That's good.
There's a whiteboard in here for some reason. Here's a sound desk, and I'm not going to touch all the shiny tools.
Is this helping, Jamie?
I think it does. It helps me get an idea for the space. And we've already adjusted things like the lights, so I'm going to pop my headphones back on and then come back into the radio world.
You're listening to 1800 Seconds on Autism.
Recently, I read your blog on Network Autism where you were talking about your support. And I know that you have paid support and support from friends. Maybe you could tell us more about what that means in your daily life.
The way that they're really great, actually. So a couple of years ago, I got into a bit of a sticky situation. I was really struggling to live alone, and I was very ill, as I think you know. And I got a flat nearby. And it was very quickly apparent that I wasn't going to be able to live on my own. Weirdly, at first, they did all the support, but they needed help. So we literally found a babysitter. We just went on to findababysitter.com and went, we've got an autistic adult who needs help with dinner. And we found a babysitter. And she came and started my evening routine. And then kind of over time, my evening routine evolved and I got paid support to help me with dinner, bath, all that sort of stuff, laundry. And then my friends provide the more kind of adventure support. It's kind of important to me that my friends are friends, not carers. Do you ever get this with things where you find that the care element of a relationship makes it a bit complicated?
I wouldn't use a friend as a carer because of that, because it's important to keep them separate. Do you mind having a babysitter? Does it make you feel like a child or you don't mind?
I don't mind. The lady was really nice. She worked in a special school. So what she did is she actually, in a way, at that time, I really needed someone to help me structure things. And that's what she did all day at school. So we put together routines, visual timetables, etc., etc. These days, I tend to use a more traditional care agency because I've got a care budget. And they're nice. It's a different thing. You know, professional care is different from friends. Over time, I'm looking forward to when the care is more isolated from friends. Because then I can, you know, have spend time with my friends being friends. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I don't really have a lot of care. I have lots of difficulties doing very everyday things because of my... If you count autism as a disability, then I have 10 disabilities. But if you don't count autism, then I've got 9. Personally, I count autism, but not everybody would. Things like cooking.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, I just sort of lived off ready meals or if my parents sent me a food parcel. But recently, I've been using a recipe box service, and that's been really helpful. I've tried a couple, but I can only really cope with 6 instructions, and they need to be clear, and I need photos that are big and taken with a bit of perspective rather than taken as a bird's eye view or as you would see it being the person doing the cooking.
That's interesting. Cooking is this collection of steps, isn't it? And then the instructions are never complete. Many years ago, I was living somewhere and I'd been on trains a lot, and you get on a train, but really you get in a train. Anyway, I'd been making these pizzas in a microwave. And this carer, I'd say to the carer, oh, these pizzas, they're bloody awful. They're so crunchy. They make my teeth hurt. I can't finish a whole one. And she'd be like, oh, well, you know, we know you like them, so try them for another day. And then finally somebody stopped to watch what I was doing, and I'd confused in and on. So I was following the instructions to the letter. I was walking up to the microwave, opening the door, putting the pizza on top of the microwave, closing the door and turning on the microwave, because I'd mixed up in and on from these trains. So I also get this thing where unless instructions are incredibly clear and I understand the concepts, I really struggle. With the cooking, I think I go the opposite way to you in that I see cooking as a thing. I see food as a thing that has to happen, and I want to get it done and out the way as efficiently as possible. And I think if I had to prepare a meal every day, an evening meal, I probably wouldn't have the energy left to work and do the things I do well. So that's one of the reasons why we have support for it, because they can do in 10 minutes what will take me 45 minutes and ruin me for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I mean, cooking for me could be difficult because, it does take up a lot of spoons. You know, it does take up a lot of...
Actually, I've got some spoons here. Shall we explain spoons?
Oh, yeah, explain spoons.
Okay. So these are spoons. These are physical spoons. But spoons are actually an analogy. So let's pretend that we had a two-spoon day. I'm sat opposite Robin. Hey, Robin.
Hi.
So if I've slept really well, I get 10 spoons a day. But let's pretend that Robin has slept well. Hey, Robin, here's 2 spoons.
Thanks.
Now, Robin's got the spoons because she slept well. And whatever she does during the day costs spoons. So, for example, hey, Robin, are you going to cook a meal tonight?
Yeah, I think that's going to cost 2 spoons, to be honest.
Oh, OK.
That's a lot of spoons. I haven't got any spoons left now.
So therefore, Robin's run out of energy and she can't do anything. Mm-hmm. So spoons are a metaphor for managing energy. I also would sometimes refer to it as like battery charge. The thing about a lot of autistic people, and certainly myself, even if I sleep really well, I only get 10 spoons a day. And things like crossing the road might take half a spoon. Certainly getting here this morning took 3 spoons. So I need to very carefully manage that budget. It's a bit like misspending by a pound when you've got £10 versus misspending by a pound when you've got £100. So that's what spoons are, if you're wondering. And we happen to have some spoons in the room right now. So I'll put these down because they're quite loud.
Yeah, so I only cook 3 nights a week, but it could be on a weekend. But then when I've done that, I really struggle to, say, do the washing up or... and it depends a lot on the recipe. Like the recipes that are sort of familiar things, they're a lot less work, a lot less spoons. Like sausage and mashed potato is less spoons because it has relatively small number of steps and you don't have to wait for many things. So a lot of the recipes involve waiting. I'm not very good at waiting. We should have a campaign for clearer instructions.
Yeah. Well, the one that also gets me is also... you know, do until cooked. Well, what does cooked look like? You mentioned sausage and mash. That's actually one of the meals I can make. But the way that I do it is I have the sausage stick, and it's a brown stick that's in my kitchen. And when the sausage is the same colour as the brown stick, it's cooked. And that's kind of like my only real way of telling these things.
Sausages are fine, easy, but only because the sausages I buy are really lean. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind if they're slightly burnt on the top, because that way I at least know that they're cooked properly. But I did once burn some mince in a bolognese, and that was pretty horrible.
I set fire to a lump of lamb once,
which
was slightly alarming. I had to call a friend and go, had a small fire.
How did you do it? How did you catch?
I left it in an oven and then kind of noticed fire coming out of the oven, which didn't seem like a thing that should happen. So I pulled it out and threw it on the floor and then was like, wait, now I'm just spreading now the fire's out of the oven. That's probably not a good idea. So I threw a towel over it. Which turns out to be the right thing to do, which was lucky. Do you know what? Lamb afterwards was delicious, but I probably shouldn't cook it that way in the future. Actually, since then, I've not cooked any lamb because it's kind of terrified me of it. Chicken's another good point as well. You know when they say, like, kick it until the juices run clear? I don't have a clue what that means. It's like, do I pick it up and squeeze it? I know I'm like meant to stab a hole in it. Do I stab a hole? You know, there seems to be all this implied knowledge. Like, if you're stabbing a hole in it, you need to stab it in a certain place or a certain hardness or a certain type of fork. And in my day-to-day life, I can make more good in the world because that's my goal. My goal is to make things good, you know, use my skills as much as I can. I don't have cooking skills. They're not there. So if I can use my technology skills to build things to help other autistic people... but I accept that somebody else is going to help me cook or somebody will just cook it for me, that's fine.
So I think we can agree that we've both had difficulties with instructions not being clear enough. Do you think there ought to be a campaign or something to make them clearer?
See, there already is. And there's this thing called the crystal mark. It's a standard for written communication. You quite often see it on bank letters and stuff, and they certify things. But it's really hard to set these sort of clear language guidelines because language maps to concepts. And if you don't understand the underlying concept, then the language will never make sense. Something that the Government Digital Service do, who make all of the government websites, I think they have a list of all words that are expected to be known by an 8-year-old. And they try and design everything to only use words from that list. And they have some really nice clear writing things. So all sentences under 25 words, you know, words from this list. So I think that helps. In fact, the digital communication guidelines called the WCAG actually now from this year onwards include simplified content as one of the success criteria. So, you know, autistic people are being listened to, but I don't know if there's any autistic involvement with Clearmark.
Do you think that it would stop you eating a frozen pizza frozen?
I'm not sure if it would have, because at that time I was really struggling and I'd inverted the words in and on in my head. So no amount of pointing it out to me would have noticed it because I'd misunderstood the concept. And I find this often happens to me. For years, I thought that Fireman Sam, the fire escaped and he went and caught it and brought it home. Because if you watch the episodes, there's nothing that actually stops you from believing that. And because he was a fireman, I assumed he would walk around on fire. So that sort of literalism can be very difficult to capture. I needed to be shown, not told, and I think that happens quite often. And in fact, in my day-to-day life, when I have the carers, I give them the permission to tell me to do things. Because as soon as someone starts asking me to do things, I tend to get a bit muddled up and I'm not sure what they mean. Do you ever get that when people say, "Oh, would you like to da-da-da?" Or like, "Would you like to have a bath?" You're like, "Is that an instruction? Go and have a bath because I smell?" Or is that a genuine question? Would I like to have a bath or would I prefer a shower? You know, the context isn't there for me. Do you ever get that?
I tried hard to learn about context. There's this book by Peter Van Mulen called Autism as Context Blindness. Mm-hmm. Because most non-autistic people communicate within context. Mm-hmm. So I tried to learn to be able to think my way out of it. But my mum did tell me once to go and put some bread in the toaster, which I did. And then about 5 minutes later, she asked, had it popped up yet? And I said, no, because you asked me to put it in the toaster. Yep. And she said, oh, well, I meant put it in the toaster and pull the handle down. But now I know that, I'll remember to pull the handle down.
The trouble for me is I don't remember those things. And there are so many of them that I just can't really keep a database of them in my head, of every single little weird thing I need to remember. And I tend to make the same mistakes multiple times, and people think that I will learn by getting it wrong, and I tend not to. The way that normally works for me is to modify the environment in some way. So, for example, for a while I was going out without my shoes on. So we put a big thing on the back of my door saying, you know, wear shoes, kind of like a checklist. And we followed it this morning, leaving the flat. That's, you know, shoes, watch, ear defenders, etc. Although we did have this idea that we should pull up my rug and put some Lego in front of the door. So if I try and go out without shoes on, I'll know about it because my feet will hurt. So that sort of thing. Modify the environment to tell me what I need to do rather than try and expect me to remember things.
How far from home did you get without shoes?
I've got all the way to the end of the street without shoes before. I've actually got all the way to the end of the street, picked my foot up, pulled a stone out of my foot, and then noticed I wasn't wearing shoes. I sometimes can't feel my feet. They're a bit dodgy. So it's surprisingly hard to notice if you've got shoes on or not.
Do you ever worry that you're going to, like, forget your door keys or something?
I forget my door keys quite often. So within a 5-minute walk of my flat, there are 3 people with door keys. And I also have access to people via chat systems, so that I always have some backup options available.
Oh, I think Ollie fell off the chair or something.
I think Ollie's chair broke.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it broke a little bit, but it's okay.
The chair broke a bit.
Were you falling asleep?
No.
Carers do this often, they fall asleep. So busy. Because if you think about it...
It's a hell of a responsibility.
Yeah, it's a hell of a responsibility. So he's got me here safely this morning, and I haven't got run over, which is, you know, good. But it does mean that he has to be very aware of things. And in a way, there's kind of this balance of... I know that by accessing support, I'm making my impairments affect other people. But as long as it's an equitable setup, you know, Ollie's paid for his time, it's a fair pay, and there's a genuine win-win situation, then I think it's okay. If I didn't have any support, I would probably just about live independently. But there's no way I'd be working. I'd just be a stressed out, incredibly tired all the time, muddled up mess. So the little bit of support that's there really does support my life.
Coming soon to 1800 Seconds on Autism.
I think I was trying to do the normal thing and it wasn't working for us, so I was taking him to those god-awful music groups that you take toddlers to, which were absolute hell for my son. He was trying to escape, I now realise.
What is it in particular that makes you interested in Doctor Who?
Big question.
It's okay, don't worry. Our producer, Damon, is neurotypical, and that was a neurotypical phrased question that I was just repeating back, sorry.
I've come to the conclusion that we're all like light switches. We're either on or we're off. We either love something totally or totally hate it.
Yeah, that's an interesting poem. And I like several parts of it, although one part of it is sticking in my memory quite strongly. Robin fell off the chair.
Hear more from Jamie and Robin by subscribing to the show on BBC Sounds. Send any questions or thoughts to stim@bbc.co.uk.
Well, we're settling down nicely in our studio, aren't we, Jamie?
Yeah, I quite like it. It's nice and dark, lovely people, lovely time, all good. Hey, Robin, you asked me about my keys. Is there any reason why you asked about keys?
Well, because if you're not wearing shoes, then that probably means you haven't gone through your routine for going out. And if you haven't gone through your routine going out, you might not have your door keys, but you need to get back in to get your shoes to mm-hmm. keep your feet safe from stones. And, so I have a short routine when I leave my flat that before I close the door, I check that I've got my keys by tapping them like that. and that my phone's in my pocket by tapping my right pocket, and if it's hard, then that means my phone is there. Mm-hmm. It feels a certain way. And then I tap my left pocket, and that feels a certain way, and that's where my wallet is. Mm-hmm. So I do that every time before I leave my flat, before I close the door, just to double check I have my keys and my phone and my wallet, because I know that I need those three things to really be able to survive. But it always gives me a lot of anxiety about, you know, forgetting those kind of things. You're lucky to live near loads of people that you know.
It wasn't luck. We set it up on purpose. Yeah. The whole idea is that I live in an environment where if I have a really... The way that we've built it is if I have the worst possible day I can have, which is no speech, no ability to communicate at all, really struggling with a panic attack or something, the support is in the environment. Now, in my life, the way that we have it set up at the moment is that I have support overnight. This is, again, one of those trade-offs of the cost in spoons. Basically, if I'm alone overnight, I'm not going to gain any spoons. And if I'm not gaining spoons, then there's nothing else I can do. So for now, we're putting the support in place overnight. Now, my hope is that by the end of the year, I won't need it. So I'm currently in the process of moving home. And as I'm moving home, we're trying to change the environment as much as possible to make things safer, to make things more comfortable. So a good example of this would be we're fitting fire doors so that if there is a fire, it is actually safe for me to stay in my room. We're also doing things like I have Piper Line set up, which is like an emergency response button that goes through to a call centre. And we have them set up that if I moo at them, it means everything's okay. If I press the button and they don't hear anything, then they send somebody. I'm never a good judge of when it's an emergency. So if I hit the Piper Line three times in one night because I'm ill, they don't care, I don't care. Again, we just recover from failure quickly. But that's why it doesn't go to friends, it goes to a call centre.
Why did you choose moo as a sound?
Because I can say moo even when I'm non-verbal most of the time. Moo is one of the few noises I can make when I'm really struggling with speech. It's also really clear over a telephone. So if I moo at you, it generally means everything's okay. Do you ever get that words just kind of dribble out all by themselves and then you need to kind of try and stop them from all falling out? It's like words all over the floor and then you feel like you're going to have to clear up a mess. No.
I echo alia sometimes when I'm stressed, which means that I repeat things like mind the gap.
Yeah, a collier is repeating things. I used to do it, oh bless my friends. So now I said that one of my friends is called Tabby. And when I was really struggling with my speech, the first speech that I got back was bad Tabby, which was something that someone had said to him when he spilled a drink. But I echoed it back to them over and over and over again. I get the same thing with Thomas the Tank Engine lines sometimes, in that very occasionally, if I'm really stressed, I'll spit out some random Thomas the Tank Engine dialogue from 20 years ago.
So some people say that echolalia is just something that happens when you're a child, but we both experience it as adults.
Yeah, it's just part of being autistic. It's the same as like stimming when I flap and other bits and bobs. I get this feeling sometimes when if I can't pick words, then my body kind of defaults to the nearest communication. So for example, most of the carers in my life have never heard me speak, which is why it's a bit odd when I give them this podcast link, because they haven't normally heard my voice. But if they get when they arrive at the door, the best I can normally squeeze out is an hello or a ula. It's just the word that will come out. But very occasionally, if something's going very well, they'll get a little bit of a collier out of me. And I think part of it is because they're very important people in my life that I'm very dependent on, and I know that communicating the wrong things can be easily misunderstood. There's a bit of an anxiety there. My speech has been on and off for ages, so it's not anything new. And for the most part, we just ignore it. We just let it happen, because eventually it's like building up momentum. It'll start off as a bit of a collier. Or many years ago, I think we did an event together with Temple Grandin, and I started my presentation by reading a poem, because the poem got my speech going and a bit of momentum up, and then I could start picking my own words. So speech is something I find quite difficult, which is kind of ironic considering I make podcasts and do public speaking as part of my job. How do you find speech, Robin?
I'd say 99% of the time I have speech. Only if I'm very ill, mm-hmm. I tend to go very quiet. And so when I got diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome, I went to the doctors complaining of abdominal pain, and they said that I should go to A&E if it continues. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's not going to be good for an autistic person, A&E. and autism on their own. That sounds like a bad combination.
Yeah.
So I went to my parents because my parents kind of act like a triage.
Yep.
Because
my friends do the same.
Yeah, so I went and, yeah, my parents knew as soon as they saw me, definitely something wrong with you because you've gone grey and you're not speaking very much. Definitely something wrong. I'm not sure if you've got appendicitis, but totally see that there's something wrong. And so they got me a GP appointment and they took me because I needed someone to advocate. I couldn't understand the questions. I needed the questions rephrased.
This is exactly the same as basically any time I go to the doctor, I go with a friend or with a support person because that's the time when I need to be able to communicate most accurately. But by definition, I'm least able to communicate. It's actually kind of interesting because you have to have a lot of trust in the other person's ability to read you. And that can take years and years and years to develop. And, you know, it takes a long time.
Yeah, so then the doctor said that I had irritable bowel syndrome and she gave me some medication for it. And then that made a lot of difference. Like, as soon as I took it, I went to sleep. And then when I woke up, I was much better. But I wasn't cured. But over a 2-week period, I got much better.
Yeah. We get a similar sort of thing. So I've had ear infections persistently for months because I don't feel the pain from them. So until there's dribbly stuff coming out of my ears, I don't really notice. But now they're gone, I can tell that my head feels better and that I can think better and I have more energy. But if you'd asked me before, oh, does your ears hurt? I wouldn't be able to say yes or no. And again, sometimes it's the people around me going, Jamie's quieter than normal or Jamie's sleeping a lot more than normal. And they have to then kind of almost do a debug routine of kind of like, can you feel your feet today? How about your ears? How about your teeth? And we then kind of finally work out what's wrong. And weirdly, I have a feeling that when I was a kid, I was actually better at this. But as I've got older, it's got harder and harder to read my body. I don't know if other autistic people experience that.
Well, your body's bigger than when you were a child.
True.
And you probably, I'm not a man, so I don't know if it makes a difference, but you probably have hair on your chest and your back and your arms and your legs, and you wouldn't have had that when you were a child, so that might
maybe
mean that you get different... I know everybody's got hair, but I mean...
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, so maybe that. And also, you have to have more sensory experiences because you have to have a shave.
Yeah, that, you know, shaving was a thing that took a long time to master. I can't do it in front of a mirror. If you put me in front of a mirror to shave, I can't coordinate it. Too many signals... So I learned to shave by borrowing a dull razor, which sounds silly, but I borrowed a dull razor and just learned how to feel my face and run a razor over it, opposite to the way that it cuts, and then kind of built up from there.
Do you mean that when you're in front of a mirror that there's too much information from, like, what you're seeing is the opposite?
Yeah, exactly that. Flipping it back the other way around, I find incredibly difficult. It's one of the reasons why I don't drive, because when I look in rear-view mirrors... my brain puts them on the other side of the road from where I am. Like, I can't vision them in space. There's another reason why I walk around rooms, because when you walk around rooms, you actually find where the real corners are. Because in this room, you've got grey in all the corners, and it can, in one moment, feel like it's expansive and 100 miles wide, and then the next moment feel like it's a tiny little box. So having that reference of how big the room is something that's really helpful for me.
We have to say what stimming is because we've mentioned it a couple of times. And our email address, our lovely email address stim, that's STIM, at bbc.co.uk. And stim is the singular of the plural, which is stimming, STIMMING. And that's the autism community word. Not everybody likes it, but that's generally the word that's used within the autism community to describe what professionals might describe as repetitive routine behaviours.
Lovely. Gotta love how the professionals pathologise stuff.
Yeah.
No, like when somebody wins the lottery, they jump up and down and flap.
Yeah.
That's what we do, just more often.
Yeah, flapping and rocking and spinning in circles. Did you know that I did a survey of 100 autistic people and I asked them about their stimming? I think that 72% of people had been asked not to stim.
Mm-hmm.
50% of people said they liked stimming. 30% of people said they liked stimming sometimes. And the top 3 reasons for people stimming were to reduce anxiety, calm down overstimulated senses, and I don't remember what the other one was. But anyway, there's a couple of reasons there. Reducing anxiety and calming down senses, whatever.
Do you get this sensation that's, for me, stimming happens in my body and comes out? And the more I let the stims flow, the more I feel myself, and actually the better I feel about things. When I was a kid, being stopped from rocking or stopped from flapping my hands...
Quiet hands.
Was, yeah, quiet hands. So this is a phrase that I don't know if we still have it in special schools, but golly, it was a pain in the butt for me. I had it a bit at primary school and quite a lot at my first secondary school. If I was flapping my hands or clicking a pen lid or something, I'd be told, "Oh, quiet hands, Jamie." Which I, of course, took to mean hands face down like I'm a prisoner on a table. And it used to be the bane of my existence, because the moment I stopped paying attention to that and got distracted by something else, they'd be back up flapping again. But actually, the flapping and the movements and stuff, they all helped me to think and work and be part of my own body. And I think sometimes in the urge to make being around autistic people more comfortable to non-autistic people, we actually deny autistic people bodily autonomy, you know, control over our own bodies. And that, I think, is one of the kind of most corrosive, well-meaning things that people do. I know they mean well, but it can be really difficult.
Yeah, let the flap free.
Yeah, free the flaps. And as we said before, if you've got a flap that you want to send us, e.g. an email or something, then please, yeah, do send it to stim@bbc.co.uk.
Yeah, you can send a photo.
Yeah, or a video. We'd love to see that.
Yeah, we would, yeah.
Although we're making a podcast, so we won't be able to show it on air. We'd be able to go, "Oh, that's a nice stim."
Well, to try and avoid information overload, I think we'll finish there.
We've talked about lots of things today.
Yeah, what are we going to wrap it up with?
Well, I've got this little bit of script, so I'll read that. That's it for this edition. I hope you've enjoyed it.
If you did enjoy it, tell everyone about it. If you didn't enjoy it, also tell everybody about it.
In future weeks, we're looking to talk about our home lives, autistic humour, socialising, parenting, all sorts of stuff. And of course, if you have any questions or suggestions, then, you know, drop us an email at stim@bbc.co.uk.
We'll see you next week. Please make sure you subscribe so you get to hear the podcast as soon as it comes out. Anyway, thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to you hearing us again soon. Bye!
Yeah, bye!
Time's up. That was 1800 Seconds on Autism.
I don't know about you, Eli, but it was one of those podcasts where I felt I properly understood someone else's world for it.
Yeah.
It felt like a gift to me.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah. They put me in a place that I would have never gotten to on my own.
Mm. I'm glad we did that, Eli.
Yes, me too. So if you liked that and you want to hear more, just search for 1800 seconds. That's 1800 seconds. Autism in the BBC Sounds app, or indeed on the BBC Sounds website. And we'll see you next time.